Here is on mantra 15. Didn't we read 15 last time? What's the famous, please remove your effulgence so I can see your face first. I think we read that one though. I think we're on 16. Let's see. Pushan Karshe Yama Surya Prajapatya Vyuharas Mensa Muha Tejo Yate Rupam Kalyana Tamam Tate Pashami Yo Swa Asau Purusha Soham Asmi. Translation. O my Lord, O primeval philosopher, maintainer of the universe, O regulating principle, destination of the pure devotees, well-wisher of the progenitors of mankind, please remove the effulgence of your transcendental rays so that I can see your form of bliss. You are the eternal supreme personality of Godhead, like unto the sun, as I am, or as am I. Purport. Maybe we can all read a paragraph. The sun and its rays are one and the same qualitatively. Similarly, the Lord and the living entities are one and the same in quality. The sun is one, but the molecules of the sun's rays are innumerable. The sun's rays constitute part of the sun, and the sun and its rays conjointly constitute the complete sun. Within the sun itself resides the sun god, and similarly, within the supreme spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan, from which the Brahma Jyoti effulgence is emanating, the Lord enjoys his eternal pastimes, as verified in Brahma Samhita. Chintamani prakata sadmasuka praviksha laksha riteshu shurabhira vipaliyantam lakshmi sahasrasata sambrahma sevyamanam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, the first progenitor, who is tending the cows, fulfilling all the desires and abodes filled with spiritual gems and surrounded by millions of wish-fulfilling trees. He is always served with great reverence and affection by hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis, or goddesses of fortune. Next.
The Brahma Jyoti is described in the Brahma Samhita as the rays emanating from the supreme spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavana, just as the sun's rays emanate from the sun globe. Until one surpasses the glare of the Brahma Jyoti, one cannot receive information of the land of the impersonalist philosophers, blinded as they are by the dazzling Brahma Jyoti, realize neither the factual abode of the Lord nor his transcendental form. Limited by their poor fund of knowledge, such impersonalist thinkers cannot understand the all-blissful, transcendental form of Lord Krishna. In this prayer, therefore, Sri Ishopanishad petitions the Lord to remove the effulgent rays of the Brahma Jyoti so that the pure devotee can see his all-blissful, transcendental form.
Any questions or comments so far? Is this the first reading for you, Jonathan?
No.
No.
I do have a question about the rays and this. I was under the belief that the rays or the effulgence is what was keeping us from seeing what Krishna really was. Like the material energy, is that not right?
Well, well, the material energy captures our attention. So it's like you could say that we can't see ourselves or Krishna because we're looking in a different direction. Right? We're not looking towards Krishna or even ourselves. We're just looking out towards, you know, it's like... watching the television and not noticing who else is in the room. But then the absolute energy, it's called Vayagyanam, or it's one energy, but it has three features, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So those who are fixed upon the effulgence of the Lord, they're attracted to that effulgence. And because they're attracted to that effulgence, they're not able to see the Lord. And that effulgence is coming from his personal body. And in order to see the Lord has to allow a person. So he's asking here for that effulgence to be removed so that he can see the Lord.
But anyways, he had a very Vedic conception of attaining spiritual knowledge, reality. So he had this analogy of people locked in a cave. And they could only see one face of the wall. And there was a fire behind them. Basically, they could only see the shadows in the wall, and they couldn't move. They were chained up their whole lives. And they thought it was reality, just the shadows on the wall. That's all they could see. And then somehow, then someone came down and freed one of the people. Dragged him up the steep ascent into the wall of the light. When he first got out of the light outside, he couldn't see properly. It was painful. The sun hurt him. He couldn't see things as they were. And then gradually his eyes adjusted and he was able to appreciate the... So the first half of the analogy would be the illusion of the material world, and the second half would be the beginning of spiritual life when you're still blinded by the sun. You can't see things as they were. The analogy goes on that he goes back down to try and liberate others, and then they curse him, and first comes at him, basically. They want to kill him, basically.
Nice. Yeah, another example sometimes given is things in relationship to distance. Like if you were at night and a train was coming, it was so far away, you wouldn't hear anything, you would just see the light from that distance. But as the train got closer, you'd begin to hear the sound, then eventually you'd begin to see that it's a train. And if you're lucky, you might even see the conductor. And or there's also the example of the green birds in a green tree. And from a distance, there just appears to be green everywhere. But when you get closer, you see there's a green tree, and then you see what all the living entities that are living inside the tree. So it's the same energy, but viewed from different angles. What do you think?
I think my understanding is getting closer to being a little more complete. Exactly that effulgence, what it is, how I'm affected.
Have you read the Bhagavatam at all? Well, the first canto is good. That verse, you know, Vedanti Tat Tat Vavidas, we might as well look at it here. It's first canto, chapter 2, I think verse 6 or 11 or something like that. Let's see. Vedanti Tat Tat Vavidas Tatvam Yajganam Advayam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Sabjate. Practically the whole Bhagavatam is based on this verse. Okay, I'll put it on. I'll be a good boy. Look at page 161. This is the second chapter of the first canto. What am I doing here? You want to read that, Jonathan? Well, I see. This is okay. There we go.
Learned transcendentalists who know the absolute truth call this non-dual substance Brahma, Paramatma, or Bhagavan.
Huh. So it's one energy. Even even when you consider quantum mechanics theory, like the string theory, you know, when they break down the material energy, you know, to its smallest particles, you have an atom, and then they break down the atom into neutrons and protons and electrons, and then they break that further down into quarks and quarks. And then finally they've come to the string theory where there's strings of light that vibrate and make a sound, you know. And they kind of come and go. And there's no substance. You know, and you take the atoms, you know, and their smallest component, and according to their geometric relationship to each other, you have all the different types of elements, and, you know, and how many protons and how many. It's the same substance, you know, same kind of proton, same kind of electron, same kind of neutron, but according to how many there are in relationship to each other and how they bond, you have this great variety. So if that's, you know, possible in the material realm, why not in the spiritual realm? So, anyway, continuing on. Let's see, it's your turn now. Right. I think it's Ross's turn. Can you read into the microphone? Yeah. Because there are people cooking in the kitchen.
By realizing the impersonal Brahmamurti, one experiences the auspicious aspect of the Supreme. And by realizing the Paramatma, or all-pervading feature of the Supreme, one experiences an even more auspicious enlightenment. But by meeting the personality of God and himself face to face, the devotee experiences the most auspicious feature of the Supreme. Since he is addressed as the primeval philosopher and maintainer and well-wisher of the universe, the Supreme Truth cannot be impersonal. This is the verdict of Sri Upanishad. The word Pushan, maintainer, is especially significant, for although the Lord maintains all beings, he specifically maintains his devotees. After surpassing the impersonal Brahmajyoti and seeing the personal aspect of the Lord and his most auspicious eternal form, the devotee realizes the absolute truth in full. Mm.
In his Bhagavad Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami says, the complete conception of the absolute truth is realized in the personality of Godhead because he is almighty and possesses full transcendental potencies. The full potency of the absolute truth is not realized in the Brahmajyoti. Therefore, Brahma realization is only partial realization of the personality of Godhead. So, learn suggests the first syllable of the word Bhagavan, Bha, has two meanings. The first is one who fully maintains, and the second is guardian. The second syllable, Ga, means guide, leader, or creator. The syllable Van indicates that every being lives in him, and that he also lives in every being. In other words, the transcendental word sound Bhagavan represents infinite knowledge, potency, energy, opulence, strength, and influence, all without a tinge of material inability.
Okay, so far, no comments or questions? Okay.
The Lord fully maintains his unalloyed devotees, and he guides them progressively in the path towards devotional perfection. As the leader of his devotees, he ultimately awards the desired results of devotional service by giving himself to them. The devotees of the Lord see the Lord eye to eye by his causeless mercy. Thus, the Lord helps his devotees reach the supermost spiritual planet, Goloka Vrindavan. Being the creator, he can bestow all necessary qualifications upon his devotees so that they can ultimately reach him. The Lord is the cause of all causes. In other words, since there is nothing that caused him, he is the original cause. Consequently, he enjoys his own self by manifesting his own eternal potency. The eternal potency is not exactly manifested by him, for he expands himself as the Purushas.
Purushas.
And it is in these forms that he maintains the features of the material manifestation. By such expansions, he creates, maintains, and annihilates the cosmic manifestation.
We're reading one paragraph apiece. Do you have the place?
It's on page 121.
121 at the top.
The living entities are also differentiated expansions of the Lord Self, and because some of them desire to be the Lords and imitate the Supreme Lord, he allows them to enter into the cosmic creation with the option to fully utilize that propensity to lord it over nature. Because of the presence of the parts and parcels, the living entities, the entire phenomenal world, is stirred into action and reaction. Thus, the living entities are given full facilities to lord it over material nature. But the ultimate controller is the Lord Himself in His plenary feature as Paramatma, the Super Soul, who is one of the Purushas. Let's
see, am I next?
Yes.
Yes. Thus, there is a gulf of difference between the living entity, Atma, and the controlling Lord, Paramatma, the soul and the super soul. Paramatma is the controller, and the Atma is the controlled. Therefore, they are in different categories. Because the Paramatma fully cooperates with the Atma, he is known as the constant companion of the living being. That's it.
The all-pervading feature of the Lord, which exists in all circumstances of waking and sleeping, as well as in potential states, in the Jiva Shakti, living force, is generated as both conditioned and liberated souls. Is known as Brahman. Since the Lord is the origin of both Paramatma and Brahman, He is the origin of all living entities and all else that exists. One who knows this engages himself at once in the devotional service of the Lord. Such a pure and fully cognizant devotee of the Lord is fully attached to Him in heart and soul. And whenever such a devotee assembles with similar devotees, they have no engagement but the glorification of the Lord's transcendental activities. Those who are not as perfect as the pure devotees, namely those who have realized only the Brahman or Paramatma features of the Lord, cannot appreciate the activities of the perfect devotees. The Lord always helps the pure devotees by imparting necessary knowledge within their hearts, and thus out of His special favor, He dissipates all the darkness of ignorance. The speculative philosophers and the yogis cannot imagine this because they more or less depend on their own strength. As stated in Ekatha Upanishad 1.2.23, the Lord can be known only by those whom He favors and not by anyone else. Such special favors are bestowed upon His pure devotees only. Sri Isha Upanishad. Excuse me. Sri Isha Upanishad thus points to the favor of the Lord, which is beyond the purview of the Brahma Jyoti.
Jai. So, next week will be Mantra 17. Well, let's hear and chant the glories of the Lord some more. Let's chant a bhajan by Bhaktivinod Thakur. You have some comment? Oh. It's all the Lord's Leela. And he says in the Bhagavad Gita too, he says there's the 15th chapter, he says there's two types of living beings, the conditioned and the liberated. And besides these two, there's the Supreme Lord. And I like in the 13th chapter, the last verse in the purport, Prabhupada, he says that the living entity somehow or other has fallen here. And he said that we may not know why, but the Supreme Lord knows. So that's where I leave it. Vaishya and I were just reading the Crow and Tall letter. You've heard that one. Oops.
I don't know about the letter. I'm familiar with the concept.
Well, it came from a letter that Prabhupada wrote. I forget who he was replying to about that question. You know, the devotees were asking him pretty much point blank about it. So he gave the example of the crow and the tall fruit. You know, what caused the fruit to fall? Was it when the crow landed or left the tree, the fruit? Some were arguing that the crow caused it to fall, and others were arguing that no, it fell.
It happened to fall.
Yeah, right. Yeah.